The following program was paid for by sponsors of Weinstein Plastic Surgery. The views and opinions expressed are not those of the staff and management of WMTR. As always, it is advisable to consult a physician before making a major medical decision. Welcome to Nip and Tuck with Doc Weinstein. Doc Weinstein is a recognized expert of cosmetic and aesthetic plastic surgery, facial rejuvenation, and breast and body contouring with an office in Chester, New Jersey. Now, here's the host of Nip and Tuck, Dr. Weinstein.
Hey, good evening, Morristown and Cedar Knolls, New Jersey. Here we are at WMTR Radio. Dr. Weinstein here. We have a special guest tonight from Princeton, New Jersey, who I know for over 32 years as a plastic surgeon, as well as myself, Dr. Raj Lala, who is a distinguished board-certified plastic surgeon in the Princeton area, who worked with Dr. Dixit for many years, as well as myself, offering priceless and timeless surgery in India for the impoverished people there. He originally from Mumbai and trained originally in surgery in India, came to the United States, trained at Methodist Hospital in surgery, and then finished his plastic surgical training with me at Downstate, Kings County State University of New York in Brooklyn. And always a distinguished surgeon, plastic surgeon. And here, Raj, why do you go to India every year and do surgery for those children?
So, good evening, everybody. My name is Raj Lala, and I practice plastic surgery in Princeton, New Jersey, as Larry mentioned. Larry and I did our residency together at Kings County Hospital in plastic surgery, and we had a professor by the name of Dr. Sharad Kumar Dixit, who was our teacher and our mentor at that hospital. He always wanted me to go to India to give back to society. When we were residents, I, of course, did not... I wanted to start my own private practice. I did not have the time to go to India. But once I got settled in my private practice, I decided to go to India and experience what Dr. Dixit was talking about on how giving back to society, giving back to humanity makes you feel so good. I went there for the first time in 1989 and just got hooked to it. I've been going back there since. Every year, month of December, I take off, I close my private practice, I go to India, we go to small rural villages in India and operate on kids who are born with facial deformities. It really gives me immense satisfaction, satisfaction that money cannot buy.
I tell you, I'm really always been so proud of you and so awed by your commitment to the India Project. First time I went to India was in 1993, and I was blown away by the number of people with significant facial deformities that were of need. And Dr. Dixit was an amazing surgeon, able to do a multitude of tasks over a number of days and never resting, really, while there were cases to be done, and always setting an example, a high bar for me to exceed my expectations and to do the best that I could do. And I know he always had the highest regard for you because you always exceeded his expectations, and I think we sometimes even exceed our own expectations. I know this past year when I was in Pune, I saw 2,000 patients, which is the most I've ever seen in a single day. And I'll never forget, I had many cleft lips, and first cleft lip was a very young child with a very significant cleft deformity, and I remember praying to do the best I could. And when I finished that cleft lip and seeing that it was as perfect as humanly possible, I had such a rush. My whole brain was tingling in excitement. And there's very few things that make my brain tingle like that. And then a second case did the same thing to my brain. And after that, I just kept going till 1:30 in the morning, from 9 o'clock in the morning. We just had a plethora of pathology to take care of. And I know it's... it's humbling to see the number of people and to see the patients come back year after year also who are so happy with the results that we're able to achieve for them. And I think you set an example for me and a higher bar for me to achieve also, Raj. I really appreciated the fact that you went every year. And I know my son also was awed by you when he did his film about Dr. Dixit called Flying on One Engine, which can be seen on the Internet. You just go to flyingononeengine.com, and you can find it. It's a one-hour movie about the India Project and Dr. Dixit. And although Raj Lala was involved, even at that time, in doing many surgeries and myself, my son, who made the film, left us completely out of it, which is typical. But the movie was really about a great man, and that great man was Dr. Shraddh Kumar Dixit. And we both try to bring his spirit every year back to India to do the things he did and try to accomplish that goal of making humanity a better place. In Hebrew, we have an expression, tikkun olam, to make the world a better place. And that's one of the goals. You know, it's always... we try to do good deeds to people, no matter who they are, even the people that clean our rooms in the operating room. We try to treat them well, because by treating everybody well, the world is a better place.
I totally agree with you. It is a very humbling experience after practicing in this country and seeing what medicine and surgery like is in this country, and you go back to India and you see these plethora of patients who have no medical means of having their deformities corrected. They wait for an entire year to come to you and get their cleft lip or cleft palate or their facial deformity corrected. And the smile that you see on their faces and their parents' faces really, really humbles you. It touches your heart. You feel good about yourself. And that's why I have made a decision that every year, no matter what, as long as I live, I will go back and serve humanity, do the best I can operating on these patients.
As long as we're healthy, as long as we have good eyes, good hands, and a good brain, we can perform surgery. I remember Dr. Dixit wasn't able to walk very well. He wasn't able to speak very well. But as long as he had his good eyes, his good hands, and his good brain, he was able to help so many people. I tell you, it's funny how you say the smiles of the people and the happiness that is brought by the surgery. Like, the mothers are incredibly smiling when they come back with their children. The kids tend to be a little bit reticent about smiling. I think they're afraid I'm going to take them back to surgery again. I don't know. And sometimes the kids are crying a little bit, but we try to give them candies, and especially if we're not doing surgery. But
that's so true.
Bring them little presents, you know.
But I said you feel good about it. I remembered there was one year when I was operating out of a small rural area in India, in Western India, and I had done all my cases for the day. I packed up all my instrument. I had a flight to take back, come back home to New York. I was walking outside the operating room when one of the mothers caught me and caught my feet, actually, and said, "You can't leave without operating on my child." And I said, "Listen, I've packed everything up. I'm leaving. I have a flight to catch. I have to go home." She said, "No, I won't let you go." And I just felt so sorry. I went back to the operating room, opened all my instruments up, autoclaved them. I said, "Heck with my flight. If I have to change my ticket, I have to change my ticket. But I have to operate on this this young girl who had a pretty bad cleft lip." After I finished my operation, I found out that my flight was delayed, and I could go back and catch the same flight to go home.
See, it was God intervened.
Exactly.
Good deed. What goes around comes around. So we're actually at WMTR Radio here, and the telephone number here is 973-267-WMTR. If you want to call in and ask us questions about plastic surgery, nips and tucks, or our missions to India, please call us, because we're happy to hear from the population here. And no question is a stupid question. If you have a question, just call at 973-267-WMTR. 1-877-9687. So, Raj, tell me, I guess that was a case that really made a difference for you mentally in terms of helping a child who had a significant deformity. What cases in private practice that you've done as of late has made an impression upon you that you feel that you've made a difference for somebody? I know you were showing me this case of that huge tumor on somebody's back and a young woman who refused to have it taken care of, but you finally convinced her to come in and get that taken care of. That was a tremendous case.
This was a case that I just did last week of a woman who had a skin cancer growing on her back probably for the last 15 years or so, and it grew to the size of about a soccer ball. It would constantly bleed, and she would just wrap toilet tissue around it to prevent her clothes from getting soiled.
Oh my God, horrible. I'm sure you cleaned it up and made it look
normal again. Finally, she took the courage and came to my office. We took her to the operating room, took the skin cancer out, put a skin graft on it, and she's doing well.
Now, I have a woman I operated on today who wasn't happy with her breast. She didn't have superior fullness, and I was able to swap out her old implants for implants that had higher profile. And I sat her up and saw that she had good balance and good superior fullness and great cleavage. And she also had a very small chin, so I was able to put a little chin implant for her. And I think it really made a big difference in terms of her looks. And I know she'll have more confidence in herself getting out there. It's something about helping a woman with her confidence that I really enjoy doing. I did have a woman some years ago who had a huge tumor in the sacral area that we had removed. I was working with a general surgeon on that, and I did a flap to close it. Now, sometimes defects are so huge, they really need a plastic surgeon to help them, the general surgeon, so we do flaps to get the area closed so people don't have to live with huge open wounds as they did years ago. Some of the wound care surgeons would have you believe that you have to live with these big wounds, but really, if many plastic surgeons are capable of closing large wounds in a very efficacious manner, as long as you have anesthesia. Obviously, you can't do some things without anesthesia, and we really appreciate some of the wonderful anesthesias we work with. I had dinner with Raj Dhan. He was telling me about his anesthesiologist out in Princeton, and I was countering about my anesthesiologist in Morristown. You know, we're competing as to who has the best anesthesiologist. But the reality is they're both really good groups of guys who and women, actually, who help us do the things we do. You know, it's a team approach. It's plastic surgery cannot be done in a void. And even when we go to India, we have some unbelievable volunteers helping us. The nurses are volunteers that work with us in India. We have anesthesiologists that volunteer. I have two pediatric anesthesiologists that help me in Pune, who I love. Dr. Mumta is unbelievable. Every time I come there, she comes and she touches my feet, so I go back and I touch her feet. Somehow, touching your feet is some type of respect in India deal.
That is so true.
You know, for your parents and your grandparents, you're supposed to show respect.
Just like you bow before God, you bow before your parents and your elders, because they are the ones who impart you with knowledge.
That's really a nice thing to do. It's not really Western. It's more of Eastern culture, I think, Southern Eastern culture. I think one of the things my aunts and uncles and grandparents always did was hug me. I remember my Aunt Molly. She had the hugest breasts of any woman I've ever met in my life, and she was a huge woman, and she used to hug me when I was like 12, 14 years of age, and she almost smothered me with her body, but that was her act of love, and she always wanted a hug from me, and I had to give it to her, because if I didn't, she was upset with me. And she always had great food on the table, my Aunt Molly. She was unbelievable. I tell you, in India, I have problems with the food, Raj. I can't eat that spicy food. I eat that spicy food, and I get swollen the next day. I can't even operate. So I'm always telling them, nay salt, nay spices. And they go, you have to have a little spices, doctor. When are you stopping for lunch? Doctor, you must stop for lunch. I said, no, I just want chai. You know, as long as they give me chai, I'm okay. What's chai? Chai is tea. Indian tea. I'll never forget the first time I'm in India, I'm in Jaipur. And at 3 o'clock, they had this special steam sterilizer. And the steam sterilizer was used to sterilize the instruments. And at 3 o'clock, almost a nice smell, a sweet smell and aroma. And the nurse says, doctor, chai? I said, I don't know about chai. You know, chai is life in Hebrew. I don't know about chai. I'm alive. You're alive. It's all good. She goes, yeah, doctor, have some chai. I said, oh, some life? Okay, I'll take this. So I took the chai. It was like a double shot of espresso coffee. I immediately was supercharged. They said, all right, bring on the cases. Let's go. You know, it's like, and now whenever I go to India, I always make sure I have my chai tea every few hours to keep myself totally charged up to do the surgery I do. I mean, that's. Do you drink a little bit of chai usually?
It's a routine in my house to drink tea both in the morning and the evening. But when I'm operating in India, I don't eat or drink anything.
Really?
Yeah.
That's like Dr. Dixie. He never ate or drank, and he just didn't even go to the bathroom.
If I do drink something, I would have to go to the bathroom, and that's a waste of time. So we start around 9:30 in the morning, and we go on till 2-3 sometimes in the night, yeah, straight, and then have dinner at that time.
Yeah, I think last year I made a mistake. I was operating very, very late. And when we got back to the hotel, there was no way of getting dinner. But they did open the freezer for us, and they gave us this delicious rose petal ice cream. Which, as long as I got my rose petal ice cream at night, I was happy, doctor. And I could sleep with my rose petal.
But talking about India, Larry, do you know that the very first documented plastic surgical operation was first performed in India
in the Sushruta, right?
In the year 4000 BC.
4000 BC?
4000 BC.
Come on, Raj.
Yes.
Not 4000. That's 6000 years ago.
That is so true.
But, you know, but I think one of the problems was in India when one group subjugated another, they cut their noses off.
No, that was not the case. The case was when you committed adultery, the punishment for adultery was to cut your nose off. So there was this king.
They didn't cut the penises off.
No, noses off.
Okay.
So there was this king whose sister got accused of adultery. And as a punishment, she got her nose cut off.
Oh, my God.
So she went to her brother and said, you're the king of this province. Why can't you have somebody fix my nose? The king thought about it and said, who can I assign to have my sister's nose fixed? He thought of a potter by the name of Sushruta. He thought the potter would be able to design a clay nose and somehow fix it on to his sister, and his sister would be happy. Clay is the color of skin, a brown skin. That is how he sent his sister to this potter whose name was Sushruta. Sushruta looked at the deformity on the nose. It was kind of an amputation of the nose, and thought of how he could reconstruct this nose. He used skin from her own forehead, turned it around, and sculpted a nose off the skin.
Which is called the forehead flap.
Yeah. Now, he documented that in the ancient Indian scriptures, which, of course, got lost over time. When the British invaded India, there was a journalist who was doing some research in ancient Indian scriptures and came across this article about reconstruction of the nose from the forehead. He thought that was very funny. He thought it was fake. He thought he wrote an article about this reconstruction of the nose as a joke in a magazine called Gentleman's Magazine.
This is a British journalist.
Which was a British magazine.
Sure.
The plastic surgeons who read this magazine picked that up and thought it was the greatest way that one could ever reconstruct the nose. And till today, we use the same exact technique that Sushruta used 6,000 years ago.
See, and now we go back to India and do surgery for those children with nose deformities and lip deformities, and the ancients of India have contributed to the world a technique that is a proven worth and value. And Sushruta, even though he wasn't a plastic surgeon at the time, he was a clay potter. He understood how to work with tissue. Yes. And was able to help this king's wife. That's an amazing story. I didn't realize he was a potter.
He was a potter, yep.
You know, but we have some saying around Rosh Hashanah, was his hands in the, as clay in the hands of a potter, as wood in the hands of a carpenter. That's how we're in the hands of God, and as he helps us through into the next year. And we always try to do a certain number of good deeds each year to offset the negatives that we might have done. And God willing, we'll be recognized for our good deeds and allowed to be on earth for another year to help people. I know you also enjoy doing cosmetic surgery in your practice and have an extensive experience with breast augmentation. And I think you prefer to use a certain type of breast implant. Which breast implants do you prefer to use, Raj, and why?
I think when we first started practice, Larry, both you and me, the implant that was widely used was silicone implants. They were made by a company called Dow Corning. So we started off using silicone implants, but then those implants had some problems. Dow Corning stopped making those implants, and then we switched to saline implants. Silicone implants are back in the market. They are different silicone implants than the ones we used to use that were made by Dow Corning. They are highly cohesive silicone implants. When I say highly cohesive, it means that if the silicone implants of today were to be cut in half, the silicone would not flow out. It would just stay within the implant. So it's kind of a semi-solid silicone.
Like a gummy bear, the gummy bear candy.
A gummy bear implant,
right? So
correct.
If you bite into a gummy bear, it doesn't drip out.
Exactly.
Exactly the way these implants, not exactly the way these implants are made, because they're not edible.
So I use the highly cohesive silicone implants. There are various styles of these implants that are now available. There are various coverings of these implants that are now available. There are smooth implants. There are textured implants. They each one have their own pros and cons. There are round-shaped implants. There are shaped implants, different sizes, different shapes. For a simple breast augmentation, I like to use a round, smooth wall silicone implant. I base on the size of the implant on the measurements of the breast and what the patient desires.
Yeah, I tell you, I spend more time trying to figure out what the patient wants than anything else, because if I can understand what the patient wants, then I could deliver. I think I use a tight wrapped bra, like a sports bra, and we try and implants with that sports bra. And I also have a Mentor sizing kit, so once we figure out the volume that they're happy with, I also do the sizes, which are more shaped implants, which are simulated of an actual implant. And then I have them come and be imaged by the Vectra three-dimensional imaging machine. And the Vectra three-dimensional imaging has preloaded over 1,000 different sized implants, and then I can show them what they had selected in the room with mirrors and this tight bra, and then we go back to my office and have their photographs in comparison to other photographs I have before and afters to confirm that's approximately what they want, you know, in real life photographs of patients who I've actually done. And I think this three methods that I use to try to determine the size has allowed me to achieve almost a 99% satisfaction satisfaction ratio. And I think nationally it's only like 80%, you know, people satisfied with the actual size.
I use the same method that you do, but I think the reason why it is difficult to understand what the patient wants is because the patient always relates the breast size to their bra size, and bra sizes come in different cups, like A cup, B cup, C cup. These cups are not standardized, so that a B cup from one bra manufacturer is totally different than a B cup from another implant bra manufacturer. And we as physicians, we as surgeons, we measure bra size in cc's, in the volume.
You know, it's like I figure each cup size is about 200 cc's. You know, so and when I have the three-dimensional vector imaging, the vector imaging can do an approximation of the actual volumetric size. And then based on the implant size, I can guesstimate what the bra size is going to be. But I don't make bras. I just make breasts. And I make breasts as perfect as possible and as perky as possible and with cleavage where possible and superior fill when wanted. So I achieve the certain characteristics that they want to achieve. As far as the actual cup size, I never guarantee cup size. Because, again, you know, the different manufacturers have different ways of making bras. And apparently Victoria's Secret makes a particularly tight bra. And they come up with double D sizes when it's a C or some, and they give patients padded bras with triple D sizes. And, you know, I think, there's a woman in Morristown that I use who has a bra shop, and I sometimes send patients to her because she fits them exactly with some really beautiful bras. And actually, just last week I had a patient I had done an augmentation on, and she came in with the most beautiful bra I've seen in a long time. I don't usually see bras that pretty. A lot of people just go to Walmart and something and buy a cheap bra for the immediate postoperative period, which I relate to because there may be some spotty initially, not very much. But I appreciate the fact that, you know, we both started using the Dow Corning 2 implants, which was different than those silastic implants, which were very thin-shelled and broke easily. And then we evolved into using saline implants extensively when there was an issue. I never stopped using the silicone implants because I was part of the research groups for Allergan and also for Mentor, which is the only U.S. manufacturer of implants today. It's part of Johnson & Johnson. And I found that there were some patients who wanted the silicone implants, and we, on my study group that we followed, had very few problems, and we put all our data together with the national data, which eventually allowed them to re-enter the marketplace with the silicone implants after the moratorium. And today, you know, with the end of the moratorium of silicone breast implants, we're having more of these higher viscosity implants with which are gummy bear-like, and I think they're the safest, best implants ever available for patients. And I thank the implant manufacturers for taking heed to manufacturing these in a safe and effective manner so that we have the safest and best implants available for breast augmentation that have ever been made. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about some of the remodeling techniques for facial remodeling that were recently presented at the aesthetic meeting in New York. And we're also going to be talking about the Miss America contest and the Miss Venezuela controversy. So we're looking forward to hearing back from you. You may call us here at WMTR Radio, 973-267-9687. 973-267-9687. Thank you.
Whether it's extra fat and skin around your midsection or lines and wrinkles in your face that weren't there a few years ago, Weinstein Plastic Surgery Center knows how important it is to look and feel your best. Located in Chester, New Jersey, Dr. Weinstein is a conservative, board-certified plastic surgeon who's a recognized expert of cosmetic, aesthetic, plastic, and reconstructive surgery, facial rejuvenation, and breast and body contouring. If you're thinking of a procedure to help you repair an area of your face, breasts, or body that you are not happy with, visit a doctor that has a proven track record of satisfied patients. Dr. Weinstein has been in Chester for over 25 years and seen over 30,000 patients. You can trust Dr. Weinstein to help you look the best you can. He's an on-staff plastic surgeon at Morristown Memorial, and at Weinstein Plastic Surgery Center, he can help you with your facelift, tummy tuck, breast augmentation, or liposuction to achieve natural-looking proportional results. Visit DocWeinstein.com. That's DocWeinstein.com.
Hi, Doc Weinstein here. Looking forward to hearing from you, or seeing you, or helping you achieve your personal goals.
Anyone who has ever needed self-storage knows what a hassle it can be. You have to rent or borrow a truck, and then find someone to help you move your stuff. And let's face it, moving furniture and heavy items without damaging them isn't easy. Renting the unit is worse. The hidden fees and admin costs are scarier than the dingy facilities you're leaving your stuff in. Why not use Closet Box instead? Closet Box is self-storage without leaving home. They'll pick up your belongings, store them securely, and bring any item back when you need it. The best part? Unlike traditional self-storage, you only pay for what you store. No paying for unused storage space. Closet Box's background check storage movers are licensed, bonded, and insured, and will take care of all of the heavy lifting. Closet Box's local storage centers are temperature controlled and monitored 24/7. Closet Box has an A-plus rating from the BBB. Call 877-978-3127 now for the season's best rates. Get $50 off first month storage using code RADIO50. That's 877-978-3127. 877-978-3127.
For 70 years, Classic Oldies WMTR has been serving the community right here in New Jersey. That's why each week we have WMTR's Rock and Rough, where we try and find homes for New Jersey's homeless animals. This week, Cassie from One Step Closer Animal Rescue, also known as Oscar, brought Capricorn. Tell us about Capricorn.
Capricorn is 1 and 2 years old, amazing personality, super friendly, loves everybody, loves to give kisses, knows how to sit and give paw. She would make a great family dog, and she really is looking for her forever home.
If you'd like to see Capricorn interacting with the WMTR staff, log on to WMTRAM.com, click on the Rock and Rough link, and there's a video right there. It's WMTR's Rock and Rough. From your animal-loving friends at Classic Oldies, WMTR. Brought to you by our animal-loving friends at Trost Auto Body on Route 46 in Rockaway. Online at TrostAutoBody.com. We'll remind you to stay safe on the roads.
When this happens, trust Trost.
Broadcasting live from the Hilltop Nissan Studios, Classic Oldies, WMTR Morristown, a Beasley Media Group station.
Hi, we're back here. Dr. Raj Lala, Dr. Larry Weinstein here, plastic surgeons, board certified, on our show Nips and Tucks. And one of the things that I noticed in the New York Times this past Sunday was an article about Miss Venezuela controversy. Apparently, there was a problem with the Miss Venezuela contest, and they've stopped it. But amazingly enough, you know, the most Miss Worlds have come from the United States, and the second most common Miss Worlds have come from Venezuela. And Miss Venezuelans have pretty well said that they are some of the most beautiful women per capita than any place else in the world, as they've claimed the second best in terms of Miss World contestants. But there's been some real problems with sleaziness going on in Venezuela now. You know, the government there, there's a few people who are getting very, very, very rich. And most of the people are wallowing in extreme poverty because of the communist-leading government there that's taken over the oil industry, and they're not really sharing the wealth. But the Venezuelan women have been part of the Miss Venezuela contest for some time, and Venezuelans really get crazy about this Miss Venezuela contest. And the average woman spends upwards of $35,000 to prepare themselves to be a Miss Venezuela. They get breast implants, they have liposuction, they have their teeth done, they have their hair done, they have special costumes. And apparently the people who are organizing this thing have tended to abuse these women in order for them to get the money that they need for these processes. And I think it's unconscionable that women should be abused in that way. I know Dr. Dixie's daughter was involved in freeing a woman who had been subjugated in the cities of India, and actually going in with police to free these girls from a bondage situation. And I think I know Dr. Dixie would have been very upset about something like this happening in Venezuela. But this morning I noticed that the Miss America contest was Sunday, and we have a new Miss America. It's Sarah Ann Sumners, the Miss Nebraska. And it's the first time Miss Nebraska has won Miss USA. And she was a very lovely girl. She was crying after she was crowned, and she actually fell down to the floor when they gave her the crown to be Miss America. I thought it was very, very touching to see that. And I hope that, you know, she is not abused in any way, shape, or form, and she's able to represent America as a woman of style and a woman of culture and a woman with good middle America backgrounds. I think, you know, it's important for a woman to be her best in all things that she does.
I think Miss America over the years has also evolved. I think before, Miss America was totally based on the beauty of a person, the physical beauty. But now I think as the years have evolved, Miss America is chosen not only based on the physical beauty, but also the mental beauty of a person, on what they bring to the society, what causes they serve, besides the physical beauty. Don't you agree?
I think you're right. I think they're looking at the personalities of these women and what they have to say and what they want to accomplish by being Miss America. I think it's one thing to be a beauty queen. It's another thing to be a representative of the United States of America, as a representative of what we stand for and who we are and what we want to be and our highest goals that can be achieved mentally and spiritually for the entire United States and world. And I think one of the things that's really surprised me about Trump, you know, I was really excited about him being elected at one point, but his focus on America First and his focus on, you know, what's good for America is good for the world, I think, you know, I think he's is a bit more global in his outlook right now in terms of what he's expressing. I think that he ultimately will be very good for the planet in terms of financials and in terms of bringing peace to the planet. But some of his statements are misconstrued. And I think this tweeting at night, late at night, is something that he might choose to abandon as time goes forward. I mean, a lot of people really like it, but
hopefully so.
Yeah, hopefully so. I know Modi likes him. Modi is like coming along there. Modi is the
Prime
Minister of India. And he's also made incredible strides in India. I think they actually stopped using 1,000 rupee notes. So one year I came home with some 1,000 rupee notes. The next year I went back to India and I couldn't use them anymore. I said to myself, my father, if they ever did this in America, he'd be dying. Yeah, so, you know, and one of the things, they want everybody to be able to use the banking system and get loans. And apparently there's a lot of poor people in India who are able to get socialized things like money back from the government because they don't earn enough. And by registering, they can actually get this money back to them. So I think it may ultimately be a good thing that all these people registered.
Well, I think what Prime Minister Modi was trying to achieve is go to what is called as a cashless society. There are certain areas and villages in India that are now, as we talk, are totally cashless. They all pay each other by credit card or by apps on their phone. So even the poorest of the poor has a phone with an app so that they can pay for groceries. So it is all a digital transaction that takes place. I think as we move forward, a lot of different countries are going to adopt the cashless society model, going digital for all transactions.
That's all well and good for most businesses, but for those poor rick drivers who couldn't find 1,000 rupee notes anymore, who put a little bit of money on the side, you know, for themselves and their retirement, all of a sudden they had no money at all because they couldn't get it into the bank, and if they had too much, they had to declare taxes on it all of a sudden. It wasn't easy for those poor rick drivers.
Yeah, I think you are going to face difficulties when you try to transform from a cash society to a cashless society, paying everybody digitally. But I think these are only temporary hurdles. Temporary hurdles that you have to go through to achieve what you want to achieve.
I had a problem. I feel for those rich drivers. That's how
they all are now taking what is called as PayTMs, which is you show them an app on the phone, you automatically transfer money that you owe to the rickshaw driver, and it goes directly into their bank account from
into
your
into their
phone.
Individual bank account or their main rick driver's bank account?
No, to their individual bank accounts.
Really? Yes. They have individual bank accounts? Does it go to the main rick driver?
Nope. In fact, what Modi wants to do is to make sure that everybody in India has a bank account.
Wow. That's a huge difference. I mean, for everybody, that would be a big difference for having a banking system in India, because
where everybody
graft and corruption has exceeded my expectations when I first went there. But I think that, you know, even the U.S. there's graft and corruption, I can't believe sometimes. And I think, you know, sometimes politicians, they just get in because they're just after certain things. They may say one thing, but they may not really mean what they say. I think we were on the street today and we saw past Governor Christie. I think you almost hit him with your car.
And he tried to cross the road right in front of my car.
And I stopped to say hello to him. He was instrumental in helping us negate the cosmetic surgery tax. And I remember talking to him before he was elected, when he was first running, and asked him about that, and he said he would definitely work on eliminating that, and he did. So he's the only politician I know who I had asked him if he would do two things, and the two things I asked him about, he actually did. And I know he had some controversial things, and I hope that our new governor turns out to be a wonderful man as well. But I still have respect for Christie, despite all the media that was negative for him. I said we'd come back and talk about certain things. I know one of the things that was very exciting this week was I had two patients come back who I had done facelifts on, one 2 weeks ago and one a month ago. And one woman was a Russian woman, and, you know, after surgery, we were concerned about her being alone, and after the first day, first night, we had somebody with her, and then she just said to my people, she goes, "I'm strong like bull." I said, "All right." And she did, and she got through it. And then we asked her if she was eating, and she says, "Yes, I eat like..." What did she eat like?
Wolf.
"Like wolf. I eat like wolf." So she was like very, very definitive about her processes of eating and things. And when she came in Monday, I noticed that her jowls and neck were completely gone. And she was worried about the swelling she had initially postoperatively, and she's back to work now. And I took some pictures of her, and I gave her a before and afters. And she was like so thrilled because she had forgotten totally what she looked like before the surgery. Before the surgery, she had quite a bit of jowling excess tissue around the jawline, and she also had quite a bit saggy neck, and the neck was completely resolved, and the jowls were completely resolved. And I think, Raj, we were talking at dinner about how you lift the platysma muscle and how you tighten the neck, and I was very impressed with your diligence. And Raj does all his face neck lifts under general anesthesia. And I do almost all of my face neck lifts under local standby anesthesia. So I give them just enough sedation local. And I think that, you know, there's room for both techniques. I think our chief, Dr. Song, used to do local standby. We used to administer the anesthesia for him at sometimes. And I just use Versed and a little bit of ketamine sometimes, or diphenhydramine. Versed is a fast-acting Valium. And patients come in with 10 milligrams of Valium orally, and after most patients have had 10 milligrams of Valium, they don't really care what we do. We put a little local in, and we can proceed. I think a general anesthetic is great, but there's a certain incidence of deep venous thrombosis, especially if you're going over 4 hours in a case, and I just like to keep the risks to the minimum. One of the problems is if you have an older woman or an older man, they have to get up and go to the bathroom after a few hours. So I self-select people that have strong bladders before I have them come and do a surgery for 3 hours. The other patient, it was a black woman, and I've operated on a large number of women of color, but most of my patients in Chester, New Jersey are white. But when we were at Kings County, we almost exclusively operated on Hispanic and blacks in our clinic population. But I explained to the woman, I'll be as careful as possible. I don't have any pictures of before and after facelifts of black women in my albums, but I'm perfectly happy to help you. And she decided to go for it. And we did the surgery 2 weeks ago, and the swelling's gone down. And again, her jowls are completely gone, and her neck is completely resolved. And she was smiling like a Cheshire cat in my office on Monday. I gave her before and afters, and she says, I'm going to show these to my daughter. My daughter helped me get through this, and I'm sure she's going to be thrilled with these photos. And she gave me consent to put her photos on the Internet. Both women gave me consent to go on with their photos on the Internet. And I don't put photos on the Internet without permission from patients. And I think sometimes when patients see before and after photographs, confidence to go ahead, because so many people are afraid of looking strange or unnatural after a facelift. And, you know, unfortunately, I was in a restaurant in New York just last weekend, and I remember seeing a woman sit down, and she looked like a cat woman. And literally, her eyes were very strange. She had obviously had some type of mid-facelift, which had changed the look of her face, and I was almost embarrassed for her. But, of course, I wouldn't say anything to her. I was with some friends. I think, you know, the surgeons I've most admired were the surgeons who got natural results. And I think, Raj, you also like to get natural results.
Yeah, I think the most gratifying thing for a surgeon is when the patient comes back and compliments your work. So I think that, at least for me, that is the most gratifying feeling that I get when the patient comes back after an operation, after a cosmetic operation, where you have improved their self-confidence. I had once a young girl who was so shy and timid. She walked in my office with her mother. She barely spoke. She wanted a breast augmentation. And after her operation, when she came back to my office as a follow-up, she just could not stop talking. And her self-confidence got so boosted up. She was always sitting at home doing nothing. She found herself a job. She is now at least 10 years post her augmentation. She comes and visits me, and she's very, very, very happy. And that is the most gratifying feeling I get when these patients come back, just to say thank you, or just to show their results.
I tell you, after the controversy occurred with breast implants, I made a policy that all my breast augmentations can come back on a yearly basis for examination. And when I do that yearly examination, I always check the implants for integrity, placement. I check the breast tissue to make sure that there's no abnormalities in it. I check for axillary adenopathy, you know, which is glandular swelling. And I ask the patients how they're feeling and if there's anything else that they want to talk to me about. And I think by addressing the fear factor of breast implants with a minimum of a yearly examination, I laid a lot of patients' fears, you know, and some patients came in who had problems with ruptured implants, and today we get an MRI, and the MRIs are pretty, almost 99% in terms of determining if there is a rupture of a silicone implant. When we were first started practice, it wasn't considered necessary to change an implant that was ruptured. But today the FDA recommends that we change the implants, and I think they may be right, because occasionally a patient may react to that material. Even though we have the gummy bear implants today, we're not sure exactly what may have occurred when there is a rupture. So we always recommend to the patient to swap out the implants for something else when there is evidence of rupture. The MRI is also an incredible examination, because you can find cancers that are a millimeter in size with gadolinium-enhanced MRI. I know I had done research on animals, and we were able to find small metastases that were a millimeter in size. So I know for a fact that it is effective in terms of lighting things up and enlightening us to possible issues or problems for a patient. And if we could find one cancer in a patient and save their lives, then we've done a good deed. It's like I was talking to the students today. I give a lecture every 6 weeks to the medical students in Morristown, the surgical students from Rutgers and from Thomas Jefferson Medical School. And one of the things I always talk to them about is melanoma, especially with the summer coming. Always worried about these brown spots or black spots that are changing color. And there are four characteristics we're concerned about: the asymmetry of these brown spots, also the border irregularity of those, and the color intensity, if there's differentiation in color, and a diameter greater than 0.6 centimeters or greater than an eraser head. Those are brown black spots that should be addressed by your dermatologist or plastic surgeon or surgeon and be removed. And I know I have identified many melanomas over the years in practice. You know, sometimes I'm called to take care of a laceration. Sometimes someone's burying their body to me to have a tummy tuck or a breast augmentation, and I'm noticing this spot, which is suspicious, and I'm going to mention it to that patient. And I've been able to take out a number of patients who have had melanomas, taking out these tumors, and I think I may have saved a few lives that way. I'm sure you have as well, Rosh.
Very true. I mean, the incidence of melanoma has almost skyrocketed. In my practice, when I first started my practice about 30 years ago, I would see about one melanoma a month. Now I see about one melanoma every couple of days. So the incidence of melanoma has really skyrocketed. In fact, I've heard in Australia, one in five people have some kind of melanoma. And one of the reasons why they attributed a higher incidence of melanoma in Australia is because there is a big ozone hole over Australia, and the UV rays of the sun come directly through this ozone hole into that area of the world. So very important that This is for everybody. Whenever you are out in the sun, make sure you wear sunscreen. Anything above SPF 25, sunscreens can only last about 2 hours. So repeat application of sunscreen if you're down by the beach. Repeat application of sunscreen every 2 hours.
I think that's a very important point there. I think you should avoid the sun between 10 a.m. and 2 p.m. because that's the most intense aspects of the sun. And also to wear a hat, a broad-rimmed hat. Most Americans just wear little caps. But if you wore a broad-rimmed hat, you're protecting yourself much more. And I love seeing women wearing white broad-rimmed hats. There's something extremely sexy about that, and I think smart. And it makes me think that the woman is smarter. Even when men wear broad-rimmed hats, I'm impressed by that as well. And I think it's protective. And I think using the sunscreen 30 or above, in my practice, I have a special moisturizing cream, which is a SPF of 50. And I recommend it to all my facial rejuvenation patients who have had facelifts. because by using this moisturizing cream, which is SPF 50 in the morning, it's protective. It's at least they've put something on which has some protection for their skin, has moisturized their skin to some extent, because there's so many patients who have such severe dry skin, especially even in the wintertime. People don't realize it, but you really should use a sunscreen even in the wintertime. And repeat application is important. So carry a smaller one with you that you can apply frequently. 2 hours is tough for some people, but at least before you go out in the morning, and if you're going to be active outdoors, to reapply it. How about you? Do you have a special sunscreen that you utilize, or a moisturizer cream in the office?
No, I just recommend any routine sunscreen. I don't have a preference for any one particular brand over another, so long as it's SPF 25 and above, and repeat application every 2 to 3 hours.
Yeah, the other thing about sunscreens are there are different chemicals that are used in sunscreens, and the one I prefer is micronized zinc oxide. The zinc oxide, I think, is more effective at preventing the sun rays damages. And the one, the moisturizer that I have in my office has a SPF of 50, uses micronized zinc oxide. One time I used to have one that was made up with cocoa butter, because I thought cocoa butter was a great moisturizing cream. But now I use a different product in the moisturizer that we're utilizing and recommending for our patients. And I have very strong acceptance of the patients for this process. We also have a special moisturizing glow-and-go ointment that patients utilize that they really love. It's like a blue gel. And the patients do extremely well with that as well for moisturization purposes, and it gives them a little bit of a sparkle. So I know in terms of facelifting, we're using basic techniques that are similar in terms of lifting up the underlying fascia and also trimming the excess skin. One of the things that I've been doing, I've had just this past year, I've done a half a dozen of, is this mint string lift, which is a thread lift technique, similar to the technique we were using maybe 10, 15 years ago, but it's dissolvable PDO stitch. And I found it very effective at relieving jowls or necks when patients can't afford that 3, 5, 10-day recovery that they need for a facelift. So the thread lift that I utilize now, there's virtually no downtime, and by the next day they can resume all normal activity. So all it is a special suture that is placed from the temple region down towards the jowls, and it helps lift that jowl, and it's really a spectacular result. It's almost instantaneous. They leave the office with the jowl resolved. So many patients come to me and they say, can't you just use Juvederm or Botox to lift my jowls? And I just find that I'm not able to do it with the fillers and Botox. I mean, you have to put so much filler in someone's face to make it fill again, and then they have that filler look, you know, of like this big face which is filled with material. I just can't do that to people. I can't make people look unnatural.
And again, with fillers, it's only a temporary look.
Yes, yes, yes. I mean, some people can't afford that time off, you know, for a facelift. You know, they have too much going on. They have to work. They can't take the time off. They can't afford the time off. And they already have time planned to go off and be away with family and things, and they don't want to devote that time to a surgical procedure. Next week, I'm going to have a maxillofacial surgeon with me, a famous man. Dr. Bagley will be here next week, next Tuesday, and it's going to be a very exciting show. I am very pleased that I was able to have Dr. Lala with me here today from Princeton, New Jersey, a board-certified plastic surgeon who I love and respect for his way he handles patients and his belief system. And I think he's an exemplary surgeon, physician, and father. Thank you so much for joining us tonight at WMTR Radio, Nips and Tucks. Look forward to hearing from you next week.
Whether it's extra fat and skin around your midsection or lines and wrinkles in your face that weren't there a few years ago, Weinstein Plastic Surgery Center knows how important it is to look and feel your best. Located in Chester, New Jersey, Dr. Weinstein is a conservative, board-certified plastic surgeon who's a recognized expert of cosmetic, aesthetic, plastic, and reconstructive surgery, facial rejuvenation, and breast and body contouring. If you're thinking of a procedure to help you repair an area of your face, breasts, or body that you are not happy with, visit a doctor that has a proven track record of satisfied patients. Dr. Weinstein has been in Chester for over 25 years and seen over 30,000 patients. You can trust Dr. Weinstein to help you look the best you can. He's an on-staff plastic surgeon at Morristown Memorial, and at Weinstein Plastic Surgery Center, he can help you with your facelift, tummy tuck, breast augmentation, or liposuction to achieve natural-looking proportional results. Visit DocWeinstein.com. That's DocWeinstein.com.
Hi, Doc Weinstein here. Looking forward to hearing from you, or seeing you, or helping you achieve your personal goals.
Celebrate spring all month long at Ed Carney Ford on Route 10 in East Hanover. There's no blarney at Ed Carney. Just great deals. Plus, tons of vehicles in stock with huge savings. You'll always have an easy car shopping experience at Ed Carney Ford. They treat everyone who walks through the doors like an old friend and have been in business since 1965. At Ed Carney Ford, you'll get a personalized experience, the best price and best service without any fun and games. Their sales staff has been with them a long time, and they're proud to help you get what you need. At Ed Carney Ford, they're local, they're friendly, and buying a car is always a pleasant experience. No haggling, no gimmicks, just great deals. Check out Ed Carney's service department. Their mechanics are the best of the best, and they only stock certified parts. Celebrate spring all month long at Ed Carney Ford on Route 10 in East Hanover, or online at edcarneyford.com. No blarney at Ed Carney.
One of New Jersey's top family-friendly clubs, now is the perfect time to see how Basking Ridge Country Club can provide the perfect backdrop to your day on the green. Basking Ridge has a variety of annual membership packages that can fit any budget and lifestyle. Whether you're looking to enjoy time out with friends or help your child learn the game at an early age, Basking Ridge Country Club can satisfy any golfer. Plus, there's no bond, initiation fee, or dining minimums required. Visit BaskingRidgeCC.com. That's BaskingRidgeCC.com. Basking Ridge Country Club. Come join us. Join us next week for more sound advice, Tuesday at 7:30. Nip and Tuck with Doc Weinstein on Classic Oldies WMTR. The preceding program was paid for by sponsors of Weinstein Plastic Surgery. The views and opinions expressed are not those of the staff and management of WMTR. As always, it is advisable to consult a physician before making a major medical decision.